Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you came by today. It's Friday. We made it through a whole other week. So today is recap day. And this week we talked, we celebrated St. Patrick's Day, and we talked about reincarnation. Some very interesting shows on television lately reinforcing my belief in reincarnation. On Tuesday, we talked about the Bullies to Buddies workbook, and we kind of tied that in with what we talked about on Monday a little bit, because we talked about behavior. We talked about a young man named Adam Kirby that Shelley brought into the picture, who is a child genius. And we talked about the correlation between a genius who all of a sudden can do things that are acquired knowledge, be very, very young, and be able to do them. In our opinion, more proof of reincarnation. On Wednesday and Thursday, we really did a lot of conversing about back pain. We did talk about spinal meningitis, the difference between bacterial and viral meningitis. I shared with everyone that my great-grandchild, about 15 days ago, was diagnosed with bacterial meningitis with MRSA. And I don't think it could get much more dangerous than that. And he is doing very well today, thanks to all the prayers and good energy that came from so many different directions. And I thank you all for that again as well. So we're going to go through and we're going to discuss all these days. If you have anything that you'd like to add, please don't hesitate to call this morning and talk with Shelley and I at 347-989-0352. We'd love to hear from you. I'm going to bring Shell in. Good morning, Shell.
Well, good morning, Renee. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How about you, honey?
Doing very good. Very good. Thank you.
That's good. That's good. before I forget, too, I think I mentioned this earlier in the week, but I wanted to remind everybody about something that's going on here in Palm Beach County. And that's the Palm Beach Mental Health Association. They are working very hard to make some changes, to be able to do some positive things in an arena where there's lots of misconception and lots of turmoil. In particular, the mentally challenged folks that are in our homeless folks that often are on some kind of social service aid, and they have monthly help with their psychotropic drugs. And a lot of times, like it's a 31-day month or something like that, goofy happens, and the paperwork doesn't come through, they don't get the help that they need with their medication. So in many cases, they go out and self-medicate and use street drugs. And that has evolved into a major, major problem. And at one of the meetings that I was at, there was a group of young people who are in that arena, and they stood up and they talked about this. And then what happens is the vicious circle. They get thrown in with our group of people, which is getting larger all the time, I might add, of street people who use drugs, who survive any way they can. Through the past year, Shelley and I have talked about all these kind of things, and we've talked about prostitution. We've talked about the illegal activities that go on in the homeless atmosphere. But the worst part is the mental illness, because, as you know, we spent a whole week talking about mental illness, and we realized that a lot of our problems can be attributed to the fact that there's not enough being done for the mentally challenged folks that are out in the streets. And some of them are born that way. Some of them have accidents or life things that happen to them that put them in that place. And there are lots of organizations out there that are trying to help. But it's not organized well enough, so a lot of people slip through the cracks. And one of the things that they have asked me to do today is to come, and they are putting together a video to be presented to the powers that be in regard to getting more assistance, being able to train more people who are capable of working with the folks that are struggling with things like this. And sometimes it's whole families. It's not a small problem. It's a big, big problem. And when you look back on some of the other things we've talked about in the past year, the young man who went into the movie theater and shot everybody, the young man who shot his mother and then went in and shot 20 kids and 6 adults at a school and then killed himself, took his own life because he was so confused in his own head that he no longer knew right from wrong. And we talked about on one of the shows recently that his father gave a statement and said that he knew almost his whole life. That's why he left the family, and that the wife was in denial, and it was he went to all different kinds of places to get help, and nobody really knew how to help him. This is a big, big problem. If we want to stop some of the other domino effects that are going on, this is one of the first places to start, is to start helping these people and get them in a place where they are safer for themselves and safer for the rest of the world. So I think, though, that we'll start with Monday. Monday was a fun show, wasn't it, Shelley, talking about reincarnation and all the things that we learned, those videos that we watched on YouTube of the moms that were so
persistent. Before we get into Monday's show, I just want one comment about mental health. This is what I would like to see happen as things move forward, and I'm hoping is there's two agencies out there right now that are at opposite ends of the spectrum, and they both have very, very valid things that they're trying to accomplish. You have the one group that's trying to get better assistance for people that have mental challenges, like you said, whether it's from an accident or trauma or they were born with some sort of chemical imbalance, things like that. And then you have the other group, CCHR, which is trying to battle because too many young people are being drugged really against their will, being diagnosed with illnesses haphazardly and being medication that's actually harming them in the long run. So what I would like to see happen is there are people that absolutely need some sort of pharmaceuticals to keep them in a good place where they can function normally and be in control of themselves. It is my belief, based on a lot of the research I'm doing, though, that that is the smaller percentage, that most people that have mental challenges can deal with them through counseling, through dietary changes, through lifestyle changes, and not these very, very powerful, life-altering psychotropic drugs. And like I said, there's no single fix for everybody. Some people do need the meds, but it is my researched opinion that it is the lesser amount of people that actually need those drugs, and they do need to be available for people that need them, but it isn't the solution for everybody. And once you've become dependent on them, it can alter you for a long time. I mean, you can come off these psychotropic drugs and still take anywhere from months to years for your personality to level off again. So I just want this is part of the research I'm doing right now, and maybe we can do an update show, in a short while after I've kind of completed some of the statistics that I'm coming up with in both directions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to do that too, because in most of the research I've done, that's not really the arena that I was presented at some of these meetings. Of course, there is drug abuse. That goes without saying. There is absolutely, positively drug abuse. People that don't need any kind of help do it because they just can't deal with things. And those people need counseling, and they need some help to help them overcome the drug abuse, that's for sure. But the folks that I'm talking about, the young people that I'm talking about, have in some cases extensive retardation, and they also have bona fide mental illness. And I think that when they get mixed up in the world of street drugs, then it poses a real problem. You also have the fact that there's a lot of young people out there and old people that are addicted to drugs. And the answer for them to get off the street is to be taken into a place like CARP. It's a fast fix, and it takes about 3 days. Usually maximum is 3 days. But the point is that it's like a big house of Band-Aids. It doesn't fix anything. It just cleans them up a little bit.
It just treats the symptom again. It doesn't go to eradicating the cause of why they feel so, you know, like not okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it's true mental illness, you really can't eradicate the problem. But you do have to be able to treat the problem with some kind of organized fashion.
I don't agree with you because some of the research, like I said, I'm not going to divulge anything right now, but some of the research I'm finding is people that even with really severe clinical mental illnesses are being helped by some of these methods that are where they're not using psychotropic drugs. So we'll do an update show. This is something I'm in the middle of right now, I'm kind of pulling information from several different sources. But I do think there is light at the end of the tunnel for people. And just like with surgeries, sometimes psychotropic drugs are the only way to go, but I think more often there are other options that are much safer.
Mm-hmm. But if they can't get the drugs that have been recommended for them now, one problem at a time, if they can't get the drugs that are recommended for them now to keep them on some kind of a balanced platform for their life, to be able to get up every day and maybe go to a job in a lot of cases and do the things that they know that they need to do and keep them in control, then what happens is they self-medicate. And that is a big problem.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts to this, and it brings in other subjects. You know, like you said, if they can't get the drugs and they're the people that really do need it, then they start self-medicating, then you get into drug abuse. So it kind of spirals out into other issues. It's a really big topic, and I agree with you. There's a lot of different issues here. And I said this the last time we talked about this, is that it seems like the people that really, really need the drugs are the ones that have such a hard time getting it, and the ones that are misdiagnosed seem to have no problem getting the drugs and are harmed by them. You have two problems happening at the same time, and it's just ironic that it seems to be playing out that way. You know, so we'll see. But I hope the agency that you're working with is successful in bringing about some positive changes, and at least getting the appropriate medications, not street drugs, appropriate medications to the individuals right now that really do need that in order to be able to function day to day.
Well, I think that one of the problems, of course, in everything that we talk about is always money. And I see on a very entry-level perspective is that a lot of money is going to places or scenarios that aren't helping. So rather than keep sending the money to those places, and it's an exorbitant amount of money because there's no There's no remuneration from anybody for the care that is given, except for the government. So you know that at the end of the day, whoever's balancing the numbers is like, oh my God, look at what we're spending for mental health. But it's not a true picture, because what it's really doing is a whole other thing. It's taking in people who are in disaster mode, and takes them in and gets them to a little bit better place, and then sends them right back out there to do the same old, same old. And that's true in a lot of the clinics that are popping up all over that say, you know, they'll help you become drug free, even if you're not talking about mental illness. By the time somebody uses street drugs for 2 and 3 years, there is a big taste of mental illness in that person, because they're no longer able to think for themselves. They're no longer able to straighten out everything that's in their head. It gets too convoluted because of all the usage of everything else. We talked yesterday about opiates and the fact that opiates can make you dependent on opiates, plain and simple. I mean, it's not just drug addiction. It's dependent on something, because now, even though you're past the point where you're in pain, the opiates, the continued use of the opiates, have taught your brain to look for the opiates. Otherwise, you're in pain. It's very, very tricky, and it's very, very, it's very, very difficult to understand. And of course, everybody's different. Some people could. It's like some people I know can stop every day and have 3 drinks every night after work. Every night. Now, in some books, that would be an alcoholic. But I know people who can do that, and that's all they ever have is those three. And then on Saturday and Sunday, they do yard work, and they do something with their family, and they don't touch any alcohol. At the end of their work day, they just need those 3 drinks. They do it to be friendly with the people they work with or whatever the case might be, and they are in control of those 3 drinks. Then there's the other people who say, yeah, let's go have one, and then you leave them there because they're there until 11, 12 o'clock at night. They come in the next morning to work smelling like booze. You know the story. So everybody's different, but it's the same with the mental health. Some of the people that I met at the meeting were young people, very young people, you know, like 17, 18, 19, 20, and you could see the issues. You could see them. And they stood up very proudly and said, you know, I smoke pot if I can't get my medications because I can't deal with anything.
Right.
And I thought to myself, but the pot is so easy to come by on any street corner, you say street corner, in church, for God's sakes, you can probably get pot. So it's a whole different scenario. And I agree with you about good health, of course. You know that we both believe that the better you treat your body, the better it treats you. We get that. And I do think that there are some people who can design their intake of food to work against the bad things that happen in their heads. Children who have too much sugar, you always see a difference in them. Children who participate in all the fast food places, grow up on McDonald's and Kraft macaroni and cheese, you can see a difference in them versus the kids that, I mean, even if they eat meat and even if they eat all the other stuff, mom buys ground round and it's good and it's not filled with dye and all this other kind of stuff. And it's there's just a difference. You have to be a smart consumer. That's for sure. That is for sure, hands down for sure. But this system of just slapping Band-Aids hasn't fixed anything. It really hasn't fixed anything.
It's actually perpetuated the problem because it's created more confusion out there with proper diagnosis and treatment, because it seems to be so haphazardly put out, and from doctor to doctor, you're getting different protocols to follow. So this is one of the things I've seen, is that there even seems to be a confusion amongst the people that are in the same arena, and it's trickling out to the individuals, the patients that need the assistance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is a big part of what is going on here, you know, is the fact that everybody has to understand. That's why I think it's necessary for us to talk about it. I think it's necessary for us to enlighten everybody to the fact that it is a problem, because unless, you know, it's like everything else, Shelley, if you're not a part of it, or, you know, like we've talked about AIDS and things like that, and we've talked about HIV, and I've even said about myself 20 years ago, when everybody was talking about the epidemic of AIDS, I thought we were still safe because nobody in my circle had AIDS. So I thought it wasn't as bad as everybody was saying it was, because that's the way I judge things, you know. If it's in my life, then it's becoming an epidemic, you know, as far as I'm concerned. So there's a lot of people out there who are pretty far removed from this kind of stuff, and I don't think they understand
what a major
problem it is.
What's the name of the organization? And then we'll get into the reincarnation. But what's the name of the organization you were you're talking about? Is this NAMI or is this a different organization?
NAMI comes to the meetings. No, this is Palm Beach County Mental Health.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, I thought this was a NAMI fund. I'm glad you clarified that. Okay.
No, NAMI. NAMI usually has a representative at the meetings. But they're not, you know, they're just another, as well as the sheriff's office, the police department, many teachers from many different schools, some young people that belong to the various clinics and places where they're like treated like outpatients. It's a big group of people. And there's also some other people from other, like halfway houses and things like that. So it's a big arena of people.
We'll have to do a follow-up show. Isn't there something that we're going to at the end of April?
The 25th of April. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe.
But what
should...
what I'm doing today, though, is they've invited me to be a part of a video that they're presenting to the powers that be in regard to our area alone, Palm Beach County area. And they've asked me to speak on the video to some of the issues that I've learned about and some of the things that I think might help. They're collecting it from various organizations. They had me write some letters, and I did that. And they're trying to, of course, get the funding from the government and all the things that they need to make the changes that they know, because they're immersed in it, that need to be done, you know. So
for
me, you and I said this months ago, every time we talk about one of the major tragedies, it's because somebody, you know, is in trouble mentally. You know, who else would go in and shoot 20 little kids and only talk to his mother via email? And nobody did anything. Nobody did anything. Mom bought him guns and slept in a bedroom without the door locked. I mean, we talked a few weeks ago about the father talking about everything, and he even said there was no doubt in my mind that he would kill me if he had a mind to. So,
right, if he had access to him, yeah.
You know, it's this kind of a subject is not like, you know, ignore it and it's going to go away. It just just mushrooms and mushrooms and mushrooms into a bigger problem. So, all right, so let's go to, I just wanted to let everybody know I'm participating in that today, and I will keep everybody up to date on what's happening with that. And, yes, we are going to the big meeting on Belvedere, and the public is invited on April 25th. When we get closer to that date, I'll remind everybody if people would like to go and listen and see what's going on. I think it helps all of us, even if there's nobody in your family that you're worried about. There could be, you know, that's a fact. There could be tomorrow. So it's something that we shouldn't ignore. It won't go away. So Monday's show was fun, I thought. I think the videos that we both watched about the kids where the moms were persistent and researched and found the actual people, I just thought that was awesome. But I got to share this because I talked with somebody that I'm pretty close to about this. And, you know, a lot of people believe in, for lack of any other word to call them, aliens. other worlds, other civilizations apart from Earth. And she said to me that she is more inclined to believe that every now and then another civilization sends somebody into our world to help teach us. I found that to be very interesting, and I thought to myself, I suppose I could maybe believe that, because I believe there's, if we're it, that doesn't even make sense. The universe is enormous. So when she said that, I said, you mean instead of like an old soul coming back again in another body? She goes, yeah. She says, and I agree with you, Rini. I've seen little kids on TV or something like that, you know, 2 years old and walk up to a piano and play Tchaikovsky. And that doesn't even make sense. I said, of course not. Or like the little boy that you brought up. What was his name? Kirby?
Adam Kirby.
Adam Kirby. You know, they're deemed geniuses. And genius, to my understanding, means a high IQ, means that you're capable of learning anything. But to have present knowledge about a language, a musical score written by, you know, somebody years and years and years ago, that's acquired knowledge. You had to have been here before. There's just no other way to figure that out.
I believe in both. I believe in reincarnation, and I also believe that more advanced civilizations have interacted with humans for thousands of years. There's a program called Ancient Aliens, and it's made up of a lot of scientists. They call themselves ancient alien theorists. I agree with probably about 90% of what they have on the show. Every now and then they come up with a theory that's a little out there for me, but for the most part, the way they look at the facts, the way they collect the information and analyze it, I think is almost irrefutable. When you have places all over the world that are connected by energy vortexes, and how did people thousands of years ago do that? How did somebody build something on one side of the world that connects to something on the other side of the world? I mean, we just didn't have the technology then. It's ludicrous to believe there wasn't some sort of advanced assistance. The other thing which I find fascinating, and I learned this a couple of years ago for the first time, and now I've heard it from like several other sources, is that our human DNA has changed 7% in the last couple of thousand years. Now, to change that dramatically, and that 7% is a lot, by the way. To change 1% would be significant. We're talking, there's, if you look at the DNA from an ancient man to modern-day man, there's a 7% change in our human DNA. So a lot of ancient alien theorists believe this is from interaction with advanced species from outside, from off of Earth, and it really isn't that far-fetched when you understand that things like wormholes do exist. You know, like what you've seen in Star Trek, where somebody enters one end of a wormhole, they come out on the other side, and they just traveled like 100 million light years or something. Wormholes do exist. Science has proved that there are wormholes out there. They've also proved that there are alternate dimensions that exist at the same time that we're in this third-dimensional physical reality, that there are other planes of dimensions that are constantly cutting through our, you know, our reality here. So what's to say that there are not advanced civilizations that have learned how to use these interdimensional vortexes and things to be able to travel back and forth and get to us and then get back home or whatever? There are energy vortexes all over the world that defy our standard measuring. Like you go there and all of a sudden electronics don't work. Like the Bermuda Triangle is a perfect example. That's one of the vortexes. But it's not the only one on the planet that goes through some of the unexplained electronic and electrical activity that goes through. There are places like that really all over the planet. And when you, one of the things they showed a map on the show one day, all these vortexes are connected. When you run a line around them, they're all connected in a straight line. So there's something more methodical going on here. We're being left clues. And as we advance, we're starting to understand the clues better and better and better over time. They're starting to make sense to us because our intellect is increasing. We're now something that appeared one way 1,000 years ago, now we're realizing is a mathematical formula, and it's starting to make sense to us. Math is one of the universal languages, and we're starting to see now in a lot of these things that at one time just look like artifacts actually have mathematical equations encoded on them. So we are starting to learn how to get messages from these things. So that's fascinating when you understand that, that our human physiology is changing, which means it's changing our brain. And when you understand that all knowledge already exists, if our brain is becoming more able to tap into things, because remember, everything's energy. If our brain is able to tap into information, then you're going to have children at 2 years old that just know things. But that doesn't mean that there's not reincarnation involved, because you also have children. See, I think that if you have a child that just knows things and is very intelligent, that just shows that, that we're evolving as human beings. And I think we're evolving faster because we're being visited by advanced civilizations. But then reincarnation is still validated because you have kids coming in remembering things about a past life of their own. They remember the name and the place, who they were, how they died, and things like that. So that absolutely lends itself to reincarnation. And like I said, I had some of my own personal experiences with that when I was very, very, very young. As I got older, the memories faded. But I had memories when I was 6 years old that I had, because remember back then, you know, you didn't have TVs with 100 channels on them. I had a TV with 3 channels. There was no way that I could have seen the things that I saw, and I used to dream about at night. And over a year, they wore off. But I was having memories of something that didn't happen to me in that life, you know. And so reincarnation, there's so much evidence for reincarnation, and there is so much evidence that we are being assisted by civilizations that are much more advanced than we are at this time.
Very interesting topic, as I said earlier this week, and I do believe in having an open mind about everything like that, because if you don't understand something, it doesn't make it false. If you don't quite grasp the way somebody is explaining something to you, it doesn't make it untrue. So I think having an open mind about things like this until you can get it is imperative. So I enjoyed the show, and I enjoyed the stuff that we both saw on YouTube and on that show. By the way, the name of the show, if anybody's looking for it on television, it's The Ghost Inside My Child. And it was very interesting, and I want to say it's on Sundays, but even if you just Google The Ghost Inside My Child, you'll see, I think it's TNT that it's on, and you'll see the times when it's on. So good show. I enjoyed it, and I too, would not be surprised about another civilization joining us upon occasion and things like that. I think those are great. Great. Then maybe that means there's still hope for us because we're pretty screwed up. So I like the thought that there may be hope.
You know, it's funny that you say that because when you look around the planet, there are people that are immersed in day-to-day difficulties, mental illness, physical illness, cancer is on the rise, you know, things like that. You look around and you say, oh, my God, we're worse off than we've ever been. And then you look in other areas, and there are people, there's cross-sections of society, and it's not just people that are well-off. I'm talking about a cross-section of society from people that are poor, 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 all the way up to somebody that's opulently rich that are just doing extraordinary things. That's why I like kind of pouring myself into positive news, because there's a lot of really phenomenal things going on also, and unfortunately a lot of it just doesn't make it to mainstream media, so it makes it appear that we're much worse off than we are. But just so everybody understands, there are great strides being made all over the planet in movements to bring about more humanity, in movements to bring around more healing, both physically and mentally for people, in energetic ways as opposed to ways that harm us. So there's a lot of advancements being made, and a lot of it's coming from this tapping into this universal knowledge I've been talking about, to people just knowing things and being able to discern solutions that are sort of outside of the box. So there's a lot out there, and I believe that we are being assisted.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You have to have an open mind. Just because you don't understand something doesn't make it untrue. And I think having an open mind and being ready to accept things that you don't fully get is smart. And that's how you grow, and that's how the world will grow. Tuesday was Bullies to Buddies Day, and we worked out of the workbook. In the last couple weeks, we've talked a lot about social training. We've talked a lot about the kids when they go to kindergarten or preschool or nursery school or all that stuff. It's moms and dads' responsibility to teach them how to be comfortable in a social setting with their own peers without mommy and daddy being there. And somehow that seems to have gotten a little bit misplaced. I'm hoping, like Shelley just said, that things are changing all the time, and that's true. The medical field is an amazing arena of, all kinds of innovative ideas and procedures and all of the above that have changed in my lifetime so many times I'm pretty sure I couldn't count them. So, but the social part used to be a big part of growing up in a family, learning how to get along with your elders, learning how to get along with your peers, and looking out for your little brothers and sisters. It was all a part of your home training. And I still see it in a lot of families. I still see it present in some workplaces, but you don't see it enough, and you don't see it in enough places. And I do believe when you don't see it, that's one of the things that supports things like bullying and poor behavior in social settings with kids. Now, just learning how to accept the fact, I mean, Izzy talks about in the workbook all the time, you can't expect everybody to like you, you know. And if somebody doesn't like you, so be it. I realize that it's difficult to deal with. I'm not real fond of finding out somebody doesn't like me. I always wonder, what the hell's the matter with them? I'm the best friend you ever had. But there are people that I rub the wrong way. So somewhere in your very young life, you have to come to grips with that. And you can't expect everybody to always say everything nice to you. And that's one of the things that Izzy would like us to be realistic about. And I agree with him. I don't like it too much. I like to think that everybody just liked each other and that it was kept things very simple. But it's not true. So he talks a lot about that, and we also talked about teaching kids when they're in a group of kids, if it's important to have parents watching you all the time. And do you remember all we said about that, Shelley, about how a child, I'm not talking about teenagers either, although it pertains to them as well, especially tween teens, about having grown-ups always around watching them. Do you remember all the things that Izzy said about that?
Well, yeah, of course. You know, I mean, you've got to let the kids interact or they never learn how to interact. If the parent is always interfering and preventing them from normal interaction, then they don't develop social skills.
Exactly, exactly. And even though I think that there needs to be observation by somebody keeping an eye. I don't think there should be intervention. We talked about the playground at the Wellington Mall. And I said to Shelley, the first time I was there, I was like, oh, my God, how many kids get hurt here a day? I mean, because kids are racing and jumping and running and hopping over babies that are crawling on the ground. And I'm like, oh, my Lord, for a few minutes, I couldn't even watch. And then all of a sudden I thought, God, they're like taking care of it themselves. And the only time it turned into an issue is when a mom or a dad jumped up and went over to intervene. The rest of the time, if a baby got knocked down and mom came running, the baby started screaming. If a baby got knocked down and the little kid that knocked him down just turned around without any niceties or anything, just made sure they were all right, looked at him, helped him up, and took off running again, everything was fine.
Yeah, the only time we've discussed this, when you need intervention, is when it turns into criminal behavior. You know, bullying is one thing. But if somebody touches you, it's classified as bullying, and it's really not. That's criminal. If somebody hurts you, if somebody does physical harm to you, or that there's a new type of cyberbullying now. I was watching a show yesterday. It's the first time I've ever seen on these judge shows, they actually had a case yesterday. Christina Perez, she's one of the new judges, like a Judge Judy, and she had a case of bullying. This young girl was suing a classmate of hers and his father for cyberbullying her because evidently he asked her to go out. I don't remember the whole story because I missed part of it. But anyway, he got angry with her because she wouldn't go out with him or something. So he made this video of hers, posted it out on YouTube, and it was vicious. It was just absolutely – and his father helped him make the video. They're like videographers. This kid's father helped him make this really, really nasty video about her, and then they posted all kinds of YouTube comments and stuff, you know, on his live Facebook page, and it was so bad that when she went to school, she was so horrifically ridiculed by the rest of her classmates that her mother had to take her out and put her in a different school. She ended up not even being able to finish her school. She went from, you know, not being popular, but, you know, just getting along with a few people to just not being able to walk on the campus anymore. And it was really bad. And when the judge saw the video, she was enraged. And she gave the people a $5,000 judgment against them for making something so vicious and posting it. And she told them, she says, and now you're going to make a video for this court on bullying and how to treat people decently. And she said, and that's going to also be part of your retribution. So not only did she make them pay a financial penalty, but she made them do what they did that harmed this girl, and now turning around, they have to take down the one video, and now they have to put up another video about being decent to people and how to help a situation and not do something that would tear another human being down. And the one thing I liked about it is that they were apologetic near the end, but the father was still like, oh, well, this was just a big misunderstanding. Oh, my God, it wasn't a misunderstanding. You made a vicious video, but they were trying to backpedal and make it like it was something that it wasn't. And this is a big problem with people that do bullies, that they don't see how devastating they can be to another person when they make these derogatory comments. So I was really surprised by the court case. It was unusual. I'd never seen one quite like that.
Well, I think that is a lesson. And when we talk on Tuesdays, when we talk about bullying and behavior of kids and everything, I think that's a good thing to bring up, something you just said, is you never know how deep your words cut somebody. And I think you should. I think you should give that some consideration before you say something. I know a lot of people don't. I know I've kidded about saying that to my sister when we were kids about if it hurts your feelings, you shouldn't be saying it to somebody else, and little things like that. But that's true, Shelley. You know, some things you say to somebody and they bounce right off them. That doesn't even bother them a bit. Somebody else, you could say the same words to them, and you reach inside and make an incision on their heart. There's a big as to how different people accept different words. And,
but think about what you just said, Rainey. You said, you know, like you don't know how something you're going to say is going to affect somebody. Think about how many times people have been injured because something was said to them. Now, think about what's happening today with cyberbullying and comments going out in print on Facebook or in a YouTube video, like what these two numbnuts did to this girl, that's now out there, not for one or two people to hear, but for thousands upon thousands of people to see repetitively. It's out there permanently, you know, and now perfect strangers that don't even know you are hearing these awful things about you or seeing this very inappropriate video about you, you know. So the level of injury, emotional injury, is so much intensified by social media because so many people are irresponsible with how they use it. And social media, like we had that whole show on social media, it's such a positive tool. It's such a wonderful resource, and people have to be responsible with it because when you put something out on there, it's out there. It's out there for thousands upon thousands of people to see. And if you say something that you're going to regret later on, you're never going to be able to track down all the people that saw that awful thing you put out there. So people really need to start being much more responsible with how they use social media.
Exactly, because somebody else out there in the background may believe what they just read about you.
That's
Because they read about you and they believe it. And now
That's what happened to this girl. See, the whole gang mentality kicked in, and then the rest of the school was treating her like garbage because they felt what these guys put out there was true about her, and it wasn't.
Well, how many stories have I read on the air about girls taking their own lives because of the things that were written on social media and text and all that kind of stuff? I agree. It does change the way everything is done. I mean, in some good ways and in some not so good ways. So, but I do think that people, like I said, I think you need to think. You could change somebody's life by saying something mean about them that really has no bearing on them at all, but somebody else who doesn't know them believes it. You're right.
Exactly.
We spent a lot of time this week, too, on back pain. And we talked at length yesterday. Patty called, and she has had her own major struggles in her lifetime. And we did answer, some kind of simple questions, but sometimes simple questions are avoided because they're not intricate enough and don't seem to blow you away. And yet they're sometimes the most important ones. The stretching, the exercise, the body immersed in water, the difference between hot and cold for treatment of aching or injured parts of your body. We talked about opiates and the devastation of prolonged use of opiates. We also talked about, Shelley shared with us the witch hazel packs, and while she was talking about that yesterday, I didn't say anything, but, you know, I went to beautician school as a very young woman to become, or young girl, I was 17, to become a beautician. And one of the first things they taught us in regard to facials and things like that is to put witch hazel packs on women's eyes. And the whole idea was to alleviate the swelling, the edema, the bags under somebody's eyes. And it works beautifully. And this is at the whole other end of your body, and kind of gross, but I'm going to say it anyway, one of the best treatments for hemorrhoids are witch hazel packs as well to reduce the swelling in a hemorrhoid that has been aggravated somehow, and you can be in awful, awful pain with a bad hemorrhoid. So
holistic hemorrhoid pads, you know, like the Tucks, they have holistic ones, actually have witch hazel in them.
Sure, yeah. Well, that's what they give you at the hospital. And if you, right after you give birth sometimes, if you've had to be... if the baby was very large and you had stitches or something like that, that's something that they give you for that as well, because that part of your body has been traumatized, obviously, especially if you give birth to a 10-pound baby like I did. And a witch hazel pad is given to you then as well, plus sitz baths and things like mm-hmm. that to help down the area. So it all fits together. We did talk about being smart about things. When somebody tells you the ocean is therapeutic, it is. The salt water, the parasites that are in ocean water are good for your skin. One of the things I don't think I said out loud, and I'm going to say it today, after you get out of the ocean or any kind of body of water like that, you must always take a shower because of the little parasites and the little live things. The ocean is a body of water that is full of life, and that's therapeutic, but it also makes it something that you should shower off your body. And we talked about being careful if your back is bad and you think going to the ocean is going to be therapeutic for you. Indeed, it will be. However, if it's a rough day and you know you're going to get knocked down, don't be an idiot. You don't go in the water when the waves are high and the sandbars have been established because of the waves. You're going to walk on uneven ground and you're probably going to hurt yourself worse. So the seas have to be calm for it to be therapeutic. And I even talked about walking. I will not walk through somebody's lawn. I'll walk on a golf course where I see that the grass is all even and there's no holes, no this, no that. But I do not walk through the grass. I learned my lesson many, many times. I have been out of commission for as long as a week from walking in a hole in somebody's yard.
Yeah, I've actually knocked my back out from exactly what you're talking about, walking and then hitting a little spot in the grass that, in some cases, is maybe only a couple inches. It doesn't have to be a ditch. It's just that one foot goes down a couple more inches than you expect, and you jam that spine sideways. And because my scoliosis is in the lower part of my back, not the upper part of my back, I'm very sensitive to then, you know, causing a pinched nerve just with a little stumble like that. So, yeah, and obviously there's other people that have a similar condition that I have. So you're very, very sensitive to just that little shift in your footing is enough to sometimes all of a sudden pinch the nerve. You know, one of the things I found with that that's helpful, which I forgot to mention yesterday, and it doesn't work for everybody, but it works for most of the people that I recommend it to. There's a natural homeopathic painkiller called Traumeel, T-R-A-U-M-E-E-L. It comes in a gel and an ointment. You can get it from Amazon. They sell it at Whole Foods and some of the Whole Foods, some of the health food stores. But it's a holistic pain cream. It's got arnica and some other things in it. Arnica is a very powerful homeopathic painkiller. And if I do injure my back, if I have a slip or a fall or something like that, my sister just recently injured her back really badly, and about 2 days later, she just couldn't take the pain anymore. And I reminded her that I had some Traumeel left here. She had ran out of it. I got it over to her, and I gave her some vials of arnica pellets. And within about, you know, several hours of doing the arnica pellets, you know, like 3-4 times an hour, because they're homeopathic, so you can keep taking them until you feel you have relief. And within a few hours of using the Traumeel and the arnica pellets, after really being in excruciating pain for a couple of days, everything leveled off, and within another 48 hours, she was able to go back to work. So, it, like I said, Traumeel doesn't work for everybody. I know there's one or two people that didn't get any relief from it, but I would have to say probably 80 or 90% of the people I recommend it to really do see pretty remarkable relief within the first 6 to 8 hours of using it. It's a very, very good product, and because it's homeopathic, there's no toxins in it, there's no steroids in it, and it can really bring about a lot of relief for people. So arnica and Traumeel are two things that I recommend for any type of injury, but especially on the lower back. You can use it on your knees. You can use it anywhere that you might injure yourself.
Let's remind everybody, though, when they're using stuff like that, any kind of topical ointment or anything, to remember where the pain is generated from. Because I think a mistake some of the people do is, like Patty said, she thought her sciatica was in her hips. She thought there was something wrong with her hips. So Clay would give her a massage, and she'd have him rub her hips, and it brought no relief, and that was because the actual pain was being generated from her lower back area right on her spine. And that has a lot to do with the connectivity that we talked about on the show and the way the pain can be radiated to a whole different part of your body, which brings me to the fact that we talked about, not at real length, but we did touch on reflexology. Reflexology is a very healing methodology, because if you have a bona fide reflexologist, they know what part of your foot to touch to help the rest of your body. And I mentioned that you can get these books about reflexology at the library. You can look them up online. And you can help yourself sometimes. And just by knowing if your foot or your hand sometimes, where you're going to be able to alleviate some of the pain. So I think that all the things we talked about with back pain were important and valuable information. And I must tell you, I don't think I've ever talked to anybody who's over the age of 30 who hasn't told me that they've hurt their back before. Not ever.
Yep.
So it is our, you know, it is the trunk of our tree, and it has to be, the integrity there has to be great. Otherwise, you suffer. You have pain, and you have a lot of times immobility. So it's
it
really
seems
important.
Like you are still perfecting walking upright.
Yeah, that could be. You could be right about that. Oh, and let's face it, I watched this young girl walk the other day in the doctor's office, and she had on those, the 1-inch toe pad on the heel, and or on the ball of her foot, and then the high heel was probably 6 to 7 inches high. And
oh, my gosh.
She weighed all of maybe 85 pounds, but she's walking around on those shoes. She was a pharmaceutical salesman at one of the doctor's offices, and I was like, that poor child is literally destroying her back.
Yep.
I mean, even though the weight wasn't an issue, all the other things that play into that kind of damage, but your feet are not made to walk on your tippy toes all day long. They're just not.
Oh.
So I thought about her, and I thought to myself, and you see them all the time. You see all the young girls.
Well, they're very popular, and I don't understand. I mean, I used to wear high heels like that when I was younger, not quite that exaggerated. And over time, I had to stop because of exactly what you're talking about. It hurt my back over many years of wearing them. You don't walk normally in them.
Well, every podiatrist that I've ever talked to about that says it's okay to wear them an hour a day, because it changes the way you're walking and where how you're situating the weight on your feet. So that part is good. I've had many podiatrists suggest that you change your shoes several times a day, which always made sense to me. Yeah. We're out of time, though. I want to thank everybody. It's been a great week. I think we had some interesting shows. I've had quite a bit of feedback. And I hope you'll all join us I'm not sure what the show is going to be about yet. I have several ideas here, and I need to research and see what's going to be the most interesting. But Shelley and I will be back on Monday, and I hope you all have a wonderful day. It's sunny here in South Florida. The weather has been beautiful the last few days, although they're threatening us with rain this weekend, which probably won't hurt. We could probably use some rain. And for those of you who are in the northern states, I see you're still struggling with that damn snow. Quite a winter for everybody. So everybody go out there and have an awesome day. You want to say goodbye to everybody, Shel?
Sure. Everyone have a wonderful weekend. Bye, Reen. We'll talk in a little bit, and we'll see you all on Monday.
Yep, and I'll update everybody on Monday for sure about the meeting that I'm going to today, and let
wonderful.
Everybody know what kind of steps are being taken to help. Because this is a big issue, and it's a big problem. So I'm glad that there are people that are involved in it that realize it's broken, so maybe it can be fixed. So God bless everybody today, and we'll be back Monday morning. Bye-bye. Bye, Shell.
Bye, Reen.